This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at southdakotachannel.org.
Good morning. Welcome to the 2016 session House Judiciary Committee meeting. Thank you for being here. Welcome to our internet listeners. Reminder to put your cell phones on mute. I spent $120 on beef jerky last night for having my phone. So we'll give a choice if people leave their phones on. It's either $100 to the South Dakota Community Foundation, or you can supply beef jerky to the room if you leave your phone on. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representatives Hunt?
Here.
Johns? DeSanto?
Here.
Algard?
Here.
Langer?
Here.
Latterell? Peterson?
Here.
Russell?
Here.
Westra?
Here.
Gibson?
Here.
Killer's excuse, Gibbons?
Here.
Nicholson?
Here.
We have a call.
Yes, Johns and Latterell are. Johns is excused. Latterell's here?
Yes.
All right, good job. Remind anyone that's here to testify to sign in on the sheet in the back of the room. And we have a couple pages here. If you wouldn't mind coming up and introducing yourselves, where you're from, what you're up to.
My name is Michael Kutcha. I'm from Clear Lake. And after school, I intend to pursue a degree of cyber operations at Dakota State University.
Awesome. Thank you.
My name is Mary Works Bauer. I'm from Aberdeen. I'm a senior, and I'm planning either to go to USD or University of Nebraska-Lincoln next year.
Very good. Good luck. Thanks for being here. If any testifiers have handouts, you can use the pages to hand them out. And as we ask questions, the committee, I'd ask that we direct back and forth through the chair. With that, I think we can proceed to our agenda. We have two bills up for consideration today, and the first bill is House Bill 1021. It's a bill to allow child advocacy centers and tribal agencies that provide child placement services to obtain results from a check of the Central Registry for Abuse and Neglect. And it is brought by our House Judiciary Committee on behalf of the Department of Social Services. And we'll open up proponent testimony on House Bill 1021.
Good morning, Chairman Mickelson, members of the committee. My name is Virginia Wiesler, and I am the Division Director for the Division of Child Protection Services within the Department of Social Services. And I'm here today to talk to you about House Bill 1021. House Bill 1021 amends is related to the Central Registry, which the department staffs and maintains, and it is a listing of individuals who have been substantiated for abuse and neglect, or a civil case of abuse and neglect, or a criminal finding such as sexual abuse or felony child abuse. Section 1 of the bill amends 268812 to add child advocacy centers accredited by the National Children's Alliance to the list of entities that can request a central registry screen from the Department of Social Services. Child advocacy centers around the state arrange forensic interviews and medical exams of children who have been abused or neglected, or when there are allegations of abuse and neglect. There are four child advocacy centers in South Dakota that are accredited by the National Council. Child's Voice, located at Sanford Hospital in Sioux Falls, Children's Safe Place at Fort Thompson, Central South Dakota Assessment or Child Assessment Center, located here in Pierre at Avera, and Children's Home Child Advocacy Center, located in Rapid City. The Oglala Lakota Children's Justice Center, located in Pine Ridge, is also an affiliate member of the National Children's Alliance. Section 2 of the bill would allow tribal agencies who have placement services, so they recruit and train foster parents, adoptive parents. They also recruit and work with kinship parents. And this would allow those tribal agencies to also come to the Department of Social Services and request a central registry screen. Currently, those tribal agencies that the department has agreements with, which are four of the tribes, we currently do that for those tribes. But for the other five tribes who do not have agreements with the department, we don't have the authority to do that, and that's what this bill would do. It's important because the individuals and the volunteers for the child placement or the child advocacy centers and those individuals who are wanting to become foster parents, kinship providers, or adoptive applicants to care for children who have been abused or neglected, this just affords additional protection for children. Both of these, this bill came about because of, first of all, the Department of Child Protection meets quarterly with the nine tribes of South Dakota. We have a state tribal child welfare consultation meeting quarterly, and this came about from those tribes asking if we would consider to bring this bill forward. And the advocacy centers came to us this summer and asked if we would consider looking at amending the statute to allow central registry screenings for their staff and volunteers. And so that's how this bill came about and is brought to you today. And I would ask for your support, and we'll stand by for any questions that you might have. Thank you.
Thank you, Regina. Is there a further proponent testimony on House Bill 1021?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Casey Marshall. I am the state chapter coordinator for the Child Advocacy Centers of South Dakota. Mr. Chairman, would it be all right to pass out handouts?
Yes, Ms. Marshall, it would be, and the pages will help you.
Thank you. Just one of each. Oh, I should keep one so I can tell them what they are. I appreciate being here today. I want to really just cover a few things. I want to be able to tell you a little about child advocacy centers in general and our centers here in South Dakota, tell you a little bit about the standards that our centers, accredited centers keep, and then also how we got here and how we came to ask the Department of Social Services if we could have that permission to be able to utilize the registry. Just quickly, what I'm handing out is this is put out by a national organization, the National Children's Alliance, the large one, and tells you generally about children's advocacy centers. And so that's just for your evening reading. And I'm passing out the state one, this little red number, and that shows you the centers that we have in South Dakota. It's a little dated. We are in the middle of cleaning that up because the Oglala Lakota Children's Justice Center obviously has changed its name. You heard that we have five centers across the state. What I thought I'd tell you is what happens in a child advocacy center. Because the only children that come to a child advocacy center are children who are suspected of serious abuse, physical or sexual abuse. Approximately 70% of the children that are seen are suspected victims of child sexual abuse. And the only referring agencies are law enforcement and child protection services. So it's not something that's widely known, and yet the work that is done there is really important. This is a best practice approach, CACs with an MDT. That's a lot of letters, but it basically is a child advocacy center, and the core of a child advocacy center is that it works with a multidisciplinary team of professionals, child abuse professionals, and that means prosecutors, law enforcement, child protection services, medical, mental health, victim advocacy with the CAC staff. All of our CACs have specially trained forensic interviewers. And when I say specially trained, and I'll talk a little bit about the standards briefly a little later, the kind of training that forensic interviewers have to be able to be a part of an accredited center, they have to be trained in those models that are evidence-based. And there are a number of them, so it's not like there's only one place that they can go. But there's just criteria that they have to be able to use. And part of this is they're interviewing children. And so in addition to be able to have excellent interviewing skills, they also have to know child development. It's sort of a pediatric type forensic interview. This is what happens, basically, in South Dakota and across the country. Children are referred to a CAC by law enforcement or child protection services because there has been an allegation or a suspicion or a disclosure of child abuse. The child comes with non-offending parents. No offenders are in the facility. The CAC is facility-based, and that means it is a place. It's an actual place. It has to be someplace that isn't going to be intimidating for a child. It's going to be safe, but also they call child-friendly. As I said, to be a CAC, you have to have a multidisciplinary team. So in addition to a forensic interviewer who will do this interview with the child, you will have team members who each of those interviews are videotaped. So the multidisciplinary team is in another room, and they are able to watch that interview. Should the forensic interviewer need to break and come and talk to them to see if there's something else that they need to cover, they can. Furthermore, then that team, following the interview, that family will receive services. There's referrals for, well, our hospital-based, all those children receive medical evaluation. But for those centers that are not hospital-based, then those children are referred if there are medical needs, mental health needs, counseling, and then all of the families have access to, excuse me, a victim advocate that will work with that family. From that point, this is at the point of report through the conclusion of a case. When I say a team, they are the ones who are meeting and collaboratively making decisions on where that case is going. All of the steps that I described are part of the standards of the National Accrediting Body, National Children's Alliance. Don't worry, I'm not really handing this one out, but I did print it off so that you would see, and if somebody does want it, they are welcome to it. It is 38 pages, but I wanted to give you an idea that this is, when I kind of move into why we're here today, that it's just one of many. There are 10 different standards, and they cover the things that I just described, the multidisciplinary team, cultural competency and diversity, forensic interviews, the victim support and advocacy that I described, medical evaluations, mental health, case review and case tracking, that's what that team has to do, a child-focused setting, because that's what these children need, someplace safe but also friendly, and then last but not least, organizational capacity. And that's where we get to today. Each of our centers, we have four that are accredited, and then they go, it's not like a lifetime deal. You have to continue to be reaccredited. So last summer, one of our centers was up for reaccreditation. It's Child's Voice in Sioux Falls, an outstanding center. They were notified after they had done, first, you know, you send off your masses of paperwork that had been reviewed. And they were notified that before their, by the person who was going to be doing their site visit and their evaluation, that there was a problem, and that was that the standard, you know, under the organizational capacity, the two standards that deal with employee screening and with volunteer screening, that were not meeting it. They're doing their criminal background checks as they're supposed to, but not using the child abuse registry. Nationally, there are over 800 child advocacy centers. And in the states, in all of the states, there are only, of all the states, there's only eight of us who do not have access to be able to have employees and volunteers screened by CACs. 8 states, that's including us. And the national accreditation person explained to me also that 2 of those are states that don't have a central registry. Now, I'm surprised. I thought that was required, but if that's not the case. So it is by far the majority of states that actually do allow CACs to have access to have screenings. Anyway, so as I said, so there we are last summer, and we're in a bind because National is asking for proof that we can't. Well, in South Dakota, it isn't that we have a list of people who can't call up and request a screening. We have in our statute those organizations that can. We were very fortunate to be able to work with DSS last summer. They were great to work with. As they helped us explain to our national accrediting body that, no, if you're not on the list, that means you can't. We don't have a separate list of those who can't. And then went about the business of working with us and being able to, come to you today. The CACs of South Dakota would certainly appreciate your favorable consideration on this. But you should also know it isn't just because of national standards for us. It's also because it's absolutely our mission to have a location that is safe for these children that we serve. Each one of them has already been victimized or has likely been victimized. And we want to ensure that the people that are around them, that are employees and volunteers, that we have done all that we can to make sure that our children are safe when they're in their presence. And with that, I thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Merchel. Is there further proponent testimony on House Bill 1021?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Pardon me. Lauren Pankratz, registered lobbyist for Sanford Health. First of all, I would apologize to the committee for not having maybe had a chance to visit with any of you about this particular House Bill 1021. I got notification of my needed presence last night, and so I'm going to speak a little bit with your permission from some comments and that were sent to me in support of the legislation. As Representative or former Representative Merschel said, Child's Voice is on Sanford Health's campus in Sioux Falls, and they evaluate children for abuse and neglect, and they see approximately 1,400 children a year. They serve eastern South Dakota, Minnesota, Nebraska, and Iowa. And as Ms. Merschel mentioned, because of this national accreditation that they do not have, they have not had the ability to be able to access that the central registry. In 2015, when they were reaccredited by the National Children's Alliance, they had to obtain a waiver from the accrediting body because they did not have access to that registry. And so that's the reason that you see House Bill 1021 in front of you today, to be able to access that for the volunteers and the potential employees that would work there. And so it's certainly a necessary piece of legislation to move forward, because Child's Voice, if you are familiar with them or have had the chance to interact with them, you'll be more than well aware of the need for those services and subsequently the accreditation. So, you know, a lot of times when you have an opportunity to testify on behalf of some organization, you like to be able to say, we would invite you over to be able to see the facility and see what happens there. Unfortunately, this isn't one of those situations because of the sensitivity and the confidentiality that takes place when those young children are being interviewed by those professional staff in the forensic interview. For better or worse, I've had the opportunity to observe those things, and the people do a marvelous job there in helping to protect our children and families. So we would encourage your support of House Bill 1021. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pankratz. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1021? Seeing none, is there any opponent testimony on House Bill 1021? Seeing none, we'll open it up for committee discussion on House Bill 1021. Representative Latterell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for the Department of Social Services. Are we at that stage?
Proceed, yeah.
Just for my, thank you for coming to testify, and just for my information, it says in the overview here that the advocacy centers can request whether or not someone's on the list. That means they're not downloading the entire list. They're just submitting a name and receiving whether or not that's on the list. Is that correct?
Chairman Mickelson.
Go ahead. Proceed.
Representative Latterell, no, they're sending in a document with their employee or potential employee or their volunteer's name on it, and then we screen that name against the central registry and then notify them back.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Proceed.
Just and then on the as far as the list itself, to get on the list, does that require a judicial conviction or is that just accusations? What does it take to find yourself on the list?
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
In order for your name to be placed on the central registry, there are one of three ways. The first way is if there is a substantiated finding of abuse and neglect, and when there is a substantiated finding, that person also has the ability to due process. The second way is during an abuse and neglect proceeding, which is a civil court proceeding. If the if there's an adjudication and the parent is found of being abusive and neglectful, then their name will go on the central registry. And if there's a criminal court finding, as I mentioned earlier, like felony child abuse, a sex abuse charge regarding children. So it has to be crimes that are harmful to children. Someone who's convicted of burglary, embezzlement, those names don't go on the central registry.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there further questions on House Bill 1021?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Haugard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for the department. In regard to the National Children's Alliance, what do you know about the National Children's Alliance? I see that it's a $12 million Washington-based organization, and I'm concerned about us reposing our trust in them to determine who should be accredited by them, as opposed to just simply having our own acknowledgement of appropriate organizations within the state. Why do we want to yield our oversight to the National Children's Alliance, which is Washington-based?
Chairman?
Go ahead.
Ms. Marshall may be able to answer that question a little better, but what I can tell you about the Child Advocacy Centers in South Dakota that I've worked with in my entire career, which is 34 years, they are excellent centers, and they have very strong qualifications in terms of their staff, and I think it brings more credibility through the National Children's Alliance with that accreditation process, with evidence-based, making sure that they have criminal background checks, the Central Registry Bill that we're here to talk to you about today. I support it, and maybe Ms. Marshall could lend some light to that also.
Okay. That was my question, was in regard to this, specifically the National Children's Alliance, not the local organizations, but the national Washington-based organization.
Representative Haugard, it was unclear to me whether or not that was a follow-up.
If Ms. Marshall has some information about it, I'd be interested in knowing that.
Ms. Marshall?
Mr. Chairman?
Proceed.
The National Children's Alliance is an organization absolutely that receives a good amount of money through Department of Justice because of the way that that was set up. There was a decision at that level of government through the Department of Justice that this Child Advocacy Center and multidisciplinary team model was the best way to handle these very unique and difficult cases so that it can be done in a way that reduces trauma to the children and still can, in such a way that a case can move forward and offenders can be held accountable. So there was really support for this, and because of that, dollars were directed in that way. National Children's Alliance is not totally government funded. It also receives donations and so forth. There just isn't another accrediting body for CACs, so it's not like there's a plethora to choose from.
Okay. I'm just wondering, why do we need to accredit these organizations as opposed to just simply filtering them through the state review? And like I say, as I reviewed this, it's National Children's Alliance, $12 million organization out of Washington, which has this quote-unquote accreditation authority, but we don't have any control over them, who they accredit. It seems like it'd be better if the state would review these advocacy agencies and just simply accredit them within the state.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Ms. Marshall.
I think that would be a little tricky. Each of our child advocacy centers are standalone. They do all their own funding. The state, South Dakota, is frankly one of the few states that does not support child advocacy centers with funding. I guess my thinking is that if you're suggesting the state take over some kind of oversight, or I don't know. All I know is I'm glad that hospitals have accrediting bodies, and so that I don't have to do all my own research, and so that we don't have to have a department, you know, that we have to pay as government in South Dakota that does that. And so I look at CACs much the same way, that it's unique. They're looking after over 800 of those CACs and doing all kinds of other valuable work. And I just, I'm afraid I'm not answering your questions, but it might just be because we sort of are seeing this from a different perspective.
Thank you, Ms. Mitchell. We're going to move on.
Thank
appreciate
you.
Your testimony. Are there any further questions on House Bill 1021?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hunt.
Follow-up to Representative Latterell's line of questioning. This would be for either Ms. Mitchell or for the department. And the question is simply, is there a procedure for someone to be removed from the list? Representative Latterell asked, you know, about the release of the information, but I'm curious as to how perhaps after years of counseling or who knows what, parents or the relatives no longer really need to be on the list. Is there a procedure for removal?
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Representative Hunt, for those individuals who are placed on the central registry because of the substantiated case of abuse and neglect, there is a procedure after 5 years that they can submit a request to the department for review because people change. You know, things happen in their lives that they didn't have control over. They change, and we have an opportunity to do that. When there's a court finding, there is not an opportunity.
Thank you. Further questions? Seeing none, we'll consider a motion for action on House Bill 1021.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Stevens.
I have moved to do pass House Bill 1021.
Second. Motion by Stevens, second by Langer. The motion on the table is do pass House Bill 1021. Are there any comments on the motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The purpose of this bill, I think we have to remember, is that is to allow these. Well, first of all, I want to back up and say this. I think it's important to recognize that these private agencies have come to the state asking permission to check on individuals that they may be using that may have a history of child abuse or neglect. And so really what we're doing here is protecting the children. And I realize there's some questions about accreditation, but that's not what the purpose or the focus of this bill is. And so I would ask that for support for the bill.
Thank you, Representative Stevens. Further comments? Representative Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to comment that Ms. Weisler and Ms. Mershall work with the Jolene's Law Task Force. They are part of the task force dealing with child sexual abuse, which is set up to protect our children in the state of South Dakota from child sexual abuse. And I am glad that they came forward to add this extra protection for children in our state, and I hope you will consider it favorably. Thank you.
Further comments on the motion? Seeing none, the motion on the table is a do pass, House Bill 1021. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Johns excused. DeSanto.
Aye.
Algar.
Nay.
Langer.
Aye.
Latterell.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Russell. Westra.
Aye.
Gibson.
Aye.
Killer excused. Stevens.
Aye.
Nicholson.
Aye.
Oh, 10 yay, 1 nay, and 2 excused.
House Bill 1021 do pass, carries 10-1. We'll move to the House floor. Representative Stevens, would you mind handling that for us in committee or on the floor? Thank you. The next item on the agenda is House Bill 1022. Is there a proponent testimony on House Bill 1022?
Good morning again. Virginia Weisler, Department of Social Services, and I'm here with House Bill 1022. House Bill 1022 revises three statutes related to permanent living plans for children who have been found to be abused and neglected. Another planned permanent living arrangement, which we in the department refer to APLA because it's a mouthful, is a term created by the Adoption and Safe Families Act that was passed by Congress in 1997. And it was a term to replace what those of us who have been in the business for a long time as long-term foster care. With another planned permanent living arrangement, child welfare agencies maintain care and custody of the youth and arrange a living situation for that youth until where they're expected to stay until they reach adulthood and transition out of custody. Another planned permanent living arrangement is a permanency option only when other permanency options are not available for that child, such as reunification, placement with a relative, legal guardianship, or adoption, and those dispositions have been ruled out. So in September of 2014, Congress passed the Prevent Sex Trafficking and Strengthening Families Act, which had a number of provisions for child welfare divisions across the country. And one of them was that it wanted to limit another planned permanent living arrangement only for youth who were 16 years of age or older. The thoughts behind that is that children should not grow up in foster care. They should have permanency, and this is one way that they looked at doing it. So the sections of the bill clarify, first of all, that if you're going to have another planned permanent living arrangement as a disposition in an abuse neglect case for a child, that young person has to be 16 years of older. You cannot use it for a child under the age of 16. The other component of the legislation was that the 16-year-old should also be able to give some input to the judge during those court hearings. When a child's in custody, there's a permanency hearing every 12 months until that child has a disposition and is no longer in court custody. So when that child comes before the court at age 16, they're able to talk to the judge, and the judge talked to that young person about their permanent plan. Why do you think basically long-term foster care is the best plan for you? It could be that rights haven't been terminated, so you can't go for adoption. It may be that legal guardianship has not been found. There may not be relatives. And for these young people, they may have been with that foster family for maybe 2 or 3 years, and they do consider them their permanent family. So that's what this piece of legislation does, limits this particular disposition for youth who are 16 years of older, and makes the judge asks the judge to make a judicial finding that this is the best permanent plan for that child. One other important component is that just because a youth has this particular disposition after age 16, if during the next year an adoptive family comes forward, or the foster parent says, I want to be the legal guardian of this child, or a relative is found that wants to become a permanent placement, we go back into court and we offer that recommendation back to the judge. So with that, I stand by for questions and ask for your support of House Bill 1022. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Weisler. Is there any further proponent testimony on House Bill 1022? Seeing none, is there any opponent testimony on House Bill 1022? Seeing none, we'll open it up for questions on House Bill 1022. We asked all our questions on the first one. Did you have a question, Representative Westrath? Representative Hoggard's good. All right. There are no questions. Do we have a motion on House Bill? Representative Gibson?
Mr. Chair, I move due pass on House Bill 1022.
Second. We have a due pass motion by Representative Gibson on House Bill 1022 and a second by Representative Latterell. I think this one's going to go. Do we have any comments on the motion? No comments on the motion. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representatives Hunt?
Aye.
Johns excused. DeSanto?
Aye.
Hoggard?
Aye.
Langer?
Aye.
Latterell?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Russell?
Aye.
Westra?
Aye.
Gibson?
Aye.
Hiller excused. Stevens?
Aye.
Nicholson?
Aye.
11 yea and 2 excused.
House Bill 1022 do pass, carries unanimous 11-0. We'll proceed to the House floor.
Chair.
Representative Langer, I object. Representative Latterell, would you take this bill on the floor, please?
Yes.
Thank you. Yes, it started at 8 in my legislative procedure meeting. All right, there's nothing else on our agenda for House Judiciary. That will entertain a motion to adjourn. Motion by Representative Gibson, second by Representative Westra. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We stand adjourned.